We could, no.
Just the roll?
Yeah. Now, we'll change the place now that it's off the water. And,
I'd like to call the special meeting of the Discovery Bay, Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District to order. Roll call, please.
President Still.
Here.
Vice President Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Tatro.
Yo.
Yo. Yo, yo, ma.
The tape that was here.
Here. All of us are here. Good, thanks. At this time, I'd like to open up for public comment. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. Any comment? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment. Item C, open session disclosure of closed session agenda. Staff?
Council,
excuse me.
Not a problem.
To hold it.
The board will adjourn to closed session in accordance with Government Code Section 54957.7.
Thank you.
All
right.
Everybody
hates it. Are we on?
We're on.
Council, if you could bring us back into session, please.
Yeah, returning from open session from closed session, there's no reportable action.
All right, thank you. At this time, I'd like to call the close of our closed session meeting.
Hey, Rich. How are you?
Good.
Okay. Digital feed, but we're using the analog.
No problem. Thanks.
Just one check.
It's all right.
Some more money.
All right. Can get this ready to go. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'd like to call the special meeting to order for the Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District. If you could all stand up and put the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele.
Here.
Vice President Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Tatro.
Here.
All right, we're all here tonight.
John Fawcett.
Here.
Hey,
John, how are you?
Good to see you, thanks. See you. At this time, I'd like to open up the meeting for public comments. The public comments will be limited to a 3-minute time limit. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There is going to be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. So anybody would like to come up to the podium, please? Okay, we'll close public comment. Item C, I'd like to turn this over to staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, public. This evening we're presenting our water master plan and our wastewater master plan to review and accept those by the board. As the board and the public are well aware, back in 2010, the board awarded contracts with Ludorf and Scombanini as well as Stantec Engineering to conduct extensive reviews of the district's water and wastewater systems. Both of those contracts have resulted in the documents before you this evening. They've been a long and treacherous process we've gone through, but part of that process was done through an extremely conscientious vetting process that staff went through with the consultants, with the public, at different workshops, as well as with members of the Water and Wastewater Subcommittee, Directors Graves and Tetro. So this evening we have the final drafts of those master plans before you, and John Fawcett from Ludorf and Scombanini will present the findings of the water master plan for the board. And once he's completed with his findings, Greg Harris our district engineer at Herwood Engineering, who also participated in the master plan preparation with Herwood, to be able to make a presentation on the wastewater master plan. So if you have any questions other than those, we can go right on into the presentations.
All right, let's start.
And everybody hear me okay? There's a lot of supporting documentation that I've included. We won't necessarily go over it. I want to just mention first, in terms of the purpose, the objective is to go over the master plan summary. I want to just touch briefly on the draft and final versions. And like Rick had indicated, there was some work in between, and including some testing we did at some wells to figure out the possibility of upgrading some of our water supply wells and what that might cost and what it might give us in terms of water supply. We also revisited water demand, and I'll go over that and shortly. So again, just to start, you know, imagine you're in charge of your water system. The first thing you do is you look at your water demand, and then you go, hey, I need some water supply. And then you say, how much storage do I need? How much treatment do I need? How are my pipelines doing? I got to distribute that water. And so that's the essence of a master plan. So let's just start briefly with water demand. What we have, and it's, I don't know, some people have a hand up there, but basically what we have is about 7,000 what we call equivalent dwelling units now, and that, and a maximum day demand that those current water users have to exert is about 5,700 gallons a minute. Now, I'll come back to this briefly. So first of all, you've got so many people, commercial, irrigation. Bottom line is, they use about 2,500 gallons a minute average, 5,700 gallons a minute during the maximum day, and there's even more during peak, which is ultimately how much water they would use at one particular hour, for example. You have to be able to meet that 1 hour demand with your booster pumps, because, and so you have different components of your water system riding on different subjects, like average day demand. That's your groundwater basin. Like, hey, do you have enough water to provide, on average, the amount of water that the people use here? What is the condition of that groundwater basin? These are all things that we address in this master plan. So for starters, what we've done since the last master plan, we've divided the water demand into current EDUs and then a category that we call committed or reserved EDUs. And where that title came from was an assessment of some agreements, some existing water connections that had flow meters on them. We said those demands are actually different than future demands of the developer coming in from the outside. So we've created, and then we've got development driven, which is like no plans at this point, no commitments at this point. So we've got those three categories of water demand, and that's what's presented in the master plan. So, in essence, you currently have 5,700 gallons a minute max day, and then with the committed one, it goes up to 6,000 gallons per minute at max day, and then with the development driven, it goes up to 7,000 gallons per minute at max day. So, like I said, first, that's the water demand, and we can get into some of the details. I have some tables to support where those numbers came from, but I'd rather at this point just move into the water demand. Okay, so basically what we have is, right now we have about a total capacity of 7,700 gallons per minute. So you go 7,700, well, I only need 7,000 at full development. Even with the developer, all the developers, I'm pretty good, right? But the problem is that the Department of Health Services says, hey, sorry, you might have your largest single well fail, and so you have to show us that you can meet maximum day demand with your largest single well out of service. And so with your largest single well out of service, you have 5,900 gallons a minute. And you go, okay, at 5,900 gallons a minute, where does that get me? So going back to the water demand, if you look there on the, with the committed reserve EDUs, the commitments that you have now, you're 100 gallons short. You currently would meet all your current water demands. You have enough. You have a surplus, in fact. And so, and I should mention, too, this assumption, the assumption in this analysis is that we can increase flow from well 1B. We did some testing, and we're fairly confident we can do that. And so that's the caveat here, and I do indicate that there. So, again, the bottom line is your max day demand is today is about 6,800, 6,900, and you have enough, you have, I mean, I'm sorry, it's 5,700, and you have 5,900, so you're good. Then if you look at committed EDUs, depending on who might come, you have some empty lots with some flow meters, who knows when they might come. They might never show up. You could make, and the other ones that are part of that committed EDU are actually Hoffman units that there were prior contract agreements to serve those, and there's flow meters already installed, and those are thus called committed or reserved. So in addition, we next went and looked at this. I do want to show you one graphic if I could, because the graph sort of shows you more.
Which, is it in our book?
It's in your pamphlet. You know what? You can't really see it on the.
Oh, it's in the short. Okay. Which page? Which
I'm sorry,
table?
Figure 4-2.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's first, Kevin, let's first look at 2.2.
Okay.
The point there, the only thing there is you can see present equivalent dwelling units. Think of those as homes, for example. It's all those, a combination of homes and irrigation. But roughly, it shows where you are right now in the vertical line. And then the water demand, we have an average day demand on the first line from the bottom, ADD, then max day demand, the next line up. Max day demand plus the fire flow, and then you have PHD, which is peak hour demand, and all those values are relevant when you're sizing tanks, booster pumps, wells, etc. I won't get into that, but that's how we look at the relationship between present EDUs, committed EDUs, and then the planning horizon 20 years out. So once we looked at water demand, water supply, and then we started evaluating our water supply needs for the future. And we noticed, as I indicated before, that in the future, the max day demand is going to be about 7,000 gallons per minute. And, well, even with the committed and reserved, it's about 6,000 gallons per minute. We only have 5,900 gallons per minute. So we're 100 gallons per minute short on committed demand. We're okay meeting what we have now, but there is this committed demand that we, so somewhere we got to get 100 gallons per minute. It actually is pretty close. I'm not even sure if the DPH would necessarily be that concerned over 100 gallons per minute in the grand scheme of things. But if there were development to occur, the next person that would come, I would think that you would have to show that you have enough water. And whether it's like, I'm not sure when the vacant lot people might show up, or if Hoffman decides to develop, then you need to consider the well right away. And so the first capital improvement item is a new well. And we would recommend, I should also mention, relative to wells, if you look at the historic well production rate, there used to be a well 3 that's been abandoned. Well 5 has been problematic. Well 2 is 40 years old. It's not like these wells would continue. Well 1B has shown a steady decline. We measure them every 2 years, and we can measure a decline. So there's going to be a decline in your useful life of your wells at the same time. So it's not, if a new well doesn't just meet future development, it also improves reliability of your system. So that's another consideration.
Just real brief, I want to make sure that everybody understands that on the number three, the second bullet point on the first page of the handout, when it refers to the committed reserve, the vacant lots, there's 151 of those. Those are vacant lots that are individually dispersed throughout original Discovery Bay or Old Discovery Bay, if you will. Just wanted to make sure everybody understood that.
Good point. And then the other 204 are associated with Hoffman Village 3 and 4 as indicated. So you'll see in the CIP, let me first back up to, let me show you on page 2-1, plan growth, the first table behind the cover page agenda, where we got the information on the plan growth was from the district through conversation they had with developers. And so the relevant part there, besides the growth in terms of how many units of residential, commercial, and irrigation they might have, another relevant piece is the estimated date of completion. And so what's really driving the schedule for needing to have a well or a treatment plant or a tank is the anticipated date that you're going to have development. And so the whole master plan is based on this development occurring at these rates shown here in the right hand corner, on the right hand column. And that's relevant because, like, take a well for example, if someone plans on having their development done in 2 years from now, or they have enough time to get their well in, but if you wait and then say it just takes like a year or so to get the well in terms of environmental requirements, and then the cost for design, construction, the whole process takes at least a year. So on any of these projects, you have to plan on doing upfront work that has a time associated with it. And again, it's those schedules in that right-hand column that would be driving the need for improvements, both in terms of the scale of the improvement, of course, based on the demand, but also in terms of when they think they might have that development, because then the system's got to be up and ready to serve it on that date they anticipate completion of their development. I think I'll skip some of these detailed graphics that basically illustrate the effect of development and relative to when you need a new well, a new filter, a new tank. There's a lot of detail in that. It might be a little bit overwhelming for people, but there's a design basis for all these components that are described in the master plan. I think what I'll do is go directly to the capital improvement plan. I have two different tables in there. They're the same, except the left-hand side has an A or a double D. And those relate with whether or not the CIP, and this is something Rick asked us to look into today, and we put in, this, not the one with the A and the double D don't appear in the master plan, but it's an attempt to sort of indicate, well, it does indicate whether or not it's development driven or it's associated with development. That was the two categories.
Very last page.
On the
left.
Left hand side.
Right, left
the page again.
You're on the, it'll be on the very back.
Also on the back page. Oh, back
right. All right. Mark, you see that on the,
yeah.
Okay.
So what's A and what's
the? Okay, A at the bottom is associated with development. Okay. Developer play a role in the need for this improvement, yep, as well as do the existing water users.
Yep.
And so basically, the most efficient way to look at this, I think, is to look at the double Ds first. And so the new treatment filter, the backwash tank, the new recycle pumps, and the new storage tanks are all clearly development driven. The others are associated with, you know, if you improve a pipeline, you're going to be a benefit to both the existing users as well as the developers. So that's in the category of A. And so this is a simplistic treatment of our assessment of what would be development driven versus associated with development. And so you could see here, if we go to 2011 and 2012, basically we think and would recommend that we go with the start the process for the new well. You're already basically with the commitments, you have your 100 gallons per minute short. Also, your reliability of some of your wells is questionable, so it would just, from an engineering recommendation, we would recommend that you proceed with a new well. So we'd be foolish not to say that, because that's our responsibility.
Your position all along.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other, we have a well 1B pump upgrade. It was actually turned out to be a relatively easy fix to get a few more hundred gallons of water that will enable you to meet the DPH requirements today, which is pretty good. If you can have a plan that doesn't show a deficit today, the regulators are going to review this, and so your plan will show that you're meeting conditions today. That's positive.
That upgrade's about 30 grand?
Yeah.
So we could, what you're saying is, we could put ourselves well in the range and then some for 30 grand. And you know what my feeling is on this. And let the well sit until the developer's going to let the developers pay for it.
Well, and since I'm going to, I was waiting for you, but since we're going to jump in, it is my, if we want if the developers want this well to start and they want to expect to build houses in a couple of years, they should start an A&R process now. They should.
Anyway, go ahead, Tony.
No problem.
Did you have it by accident, that interruption? You didn't mean to do that? There you go. Okay. Just want to be clear.
We've also, there's a chemical room upgrade. We recommend, that's part of a current task. There's a booster pump upgrade at the Newport treatment plant. The booster pump's removed now and it needs to be fixed. There's some pipeline replacement projects that are undergoing, and the district is more or less taking the lead on those. We put in, let me just mention briefly on the groundwater basin management. When you propose a new well that is growth inducing, meaning, oh, you're building that well because there's going to be growth, it's going to trigger these regulations that you're going to be required to show that you have enough groundwater in your basin to provide water for that. And so it's going to go under environmental review. And what's required when you do that assessment is a long history of groundwater levels. They want to be able to look at a, they call it a hydrograph, where they can see, hey, here's the water table, it's maintaining a constant level. And in our master plan, we talk about that. We say it's gone down since the 90s and the 2000s, but we're not convinced that it's a drought situation, but more related with some dry periods in time. So we're not that alarmed by it, and but if you don't have the documentation to show that, you really do want to know what your basin's doing in terms of water quality and how much water is there. It's important to you. And I know Virgil has signed up for a program where he's part of a bigger basin where now he's going to be submitting water level data from wells here. And then you have Diablo Water District submitting
values, and so they're all looking at the whole basin. There's water quality, water level data, because in California, the more and more emphasis is going to be on groundwater, and it's like groundwater is going to become such a key component. Right now, it's not regulated. The guy, like my boss, Joe Scalmanini, says, the guy with the biggest draw wins is the way it works now. But some basins that we get involved with, there's lawsuits, there's adjudication, there's managers of groundwater basins, and it's going to get more serious with time, because especially if there's droughts or anything, it's going to be a really important thing to know where your basin sits relative to your water levels and water quality. And so there's a CIP item we have in here that creates a formal groundwater basin sort of assessment. And the initial cost to put in some transducers and do some surveying is pretty low cost. But getting that data today, and we did get some this fall, is important towards establishing a record of what that basin's doing.
Is that the last two items, at A and B, at the bottom of the page?
That's right.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's in 5A through D.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's groundwater basin part there, Kevin. Yeah, let's just touch bases on the last one there.
It's so big, I can hardly write it on the page.
Yeah, I know. It's even worse on the overhead.
Okay.
Finally, 6A and B, that pertains to water conservation and demand management. There's already a mandate to have meters installations by 2020. And so what we put in there at B is the beginning of a water conservation feasibility evaluation.
About 2025, they're saying they want it. They're
going to
make it.
It's a law.
But it's not. The laws have changed.
Yeah, that's right. It's getting.
Give us back our 5 years.
It's
2025.
It's 2025. You're right. But there's a another bill that made it 2020. But it's not approved yet.
It's not.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, but you've got it in this graph.
Well, let's not keep our heads in the sand. If it's a bill and it's, you know, water bills, water conservation bills are being passed, not passed.
Yeah.
So the odds of it passing are much greater. There's no use saying, oh, it's not there yet. Let's not think about it. You know, we need to take these things into consideration.
Again, it's the sort of thing, Ray, where we would land on the conservative side to be able to, if it does come, you want to be ready for it. In terms of water conservation, there's some, we didn't want to commit you to anything relative to water conservation, but we have a little evaluation feasibility study in here to get you thinking about it, because there's some merit to it. You're eligible for grants. The state ties, if you have a water conservation, you're eligible for some grants to do some different water-related studies or evaluations, and a lot of water districts will sign up for it. Also, it does have the benefit of reducing water demand. And if you can reduce water demand, you can reduce water treatment, pipelines, booster pumps, all that. So it's like there's some merit to that as well. And typically they would have, sometimes you can, there's low-hanging fruit. Once you start looking at your water demand, you might find some low-hanging fruit somewhere. You know, just having those flow meters in there are going to tell you where your water is going. And if you have some areas where you didn't even know water was being wasted for irrigation lines or whatever, it'll be good to know that. And you can, if you get a formal program going, you can start to have confidence that your demand's down, and then the state will agree, hey, yeah, your demand is down, back off on all your treatment, storage, etc., and it can be a cost savings. So that's the essence of the that's item number 7 on the agenda. So that's kind of the overview of everything right there.
There will be. Go ahead. Any questions?
No, it sounds like we pretty much know it. To the devil's advocate, I agree that water conservation is a wonderful thing, but our rates are what drives our economy and our income. So we would reward the public in this town for saving water by raising their rates. That's what we have to do.
The overhead.
To recover our overhead. When they start saving water and paying less, we're going to raise our rates.
Don't make me do it again.
No, that would be the perception. But in reality, they're still going to pay the same amount for water as they've always paid for water. Conserving is just, the education piece has to be conserved because it's the right thing to do. Conserving is not going to, you can't tell them it's going to save them money because we know it's not going to save them money.
How's it going to be the same if they're paid by use?
Well, because it's the same.
Can I shorten this up? Okay, we had a very long coverage
of the water meter.
Fortunately, in a very private environment.
In a way, we're both saying the same thing, but let me say it how it is and how it gets there. Okay, yes. What happens is when you go to all meters, people will start using less water, and based on our current rates, their prices are going to go down. Okay? Now.
Not for very long.
We don't know how true we're at. But the prices will go down, and then, now once that happens, when you go back and look at you're saying, okay, now our revenue's down, we're not collecting enough money to cover our infrastructure, we have to raise rates. Yes, I might agree that they may end up where they were, but to them, it's a rate increase.
Right, but so what I'm saying is, if it costs a dollar to provide water to the town, mm-hmm. everybody's still got to pay that dollar. By putting water meters in, they pay that dollar in a fair share. They pay for what they use, not for what they're taxed on. So those that aren't here as much don't pay as much. Those that are here more pay more, or those that use more pay more. You can put in a tier structure, but that's, I don't even want to get to that point. The point is, you still have to pay that dollar. So the educational piece is, conserve water for the right reason, because it's what we need to do in California. It's not going to save you any money, but it's going to save water for this town so we can be sustainable for a longer period of time. It's not going to save you money. It has to be in that educational piece. You still got to pay that buck, or $1 million, or $5 million, whatever it is. So you don't pay more for the water, even though the price per gallon might go up. You're still paying the same amount of money.
What do you mean, might?
It's the same amount of money, though. Nobody's paying any more.
For less water.
Okay.
So you're still
paying the same amount of money to put water in your house.
That's a great analogy.
It's the truth.
But when you get a bill in the mail, when your bill comes in the mail, you'll be going, our water bill this month was $71. Honey, we got to cut back and stuff. So the next month you go, okay, we really conserved. And wow, we got it down to $51. And then we're going to raise your rate back up to $71 for using less water. It's still a rate increase. I don't care how you cut it. It's a rate increase.
It's all about education. You have to explain to the people that you have to pay for the water in this town, no matter how much of it you use. And if you use more, we're going to punish you for it. We're going to put a tier rate in, and you're going to pay even more.
Do that on an election year.
It's just a fact of life.
It is a fact of life, but it's still a matter of it's going to be a rate. Are you going to say it anyway? It's a rate increase.
Right.
Say whatever you want.
What was the timeline on that, on those meters? When was the meters implemented? 2025.
It was 2025. It's possibly 2020.
I will be bringing a report to the board very soon on this subject.
Can't wait.
All right. Okay. No problem, but we're not looking at that tonight as far as the implementation of the water meter. We know that's coming. And
yeah. According to this, it's in the budget item for 2017-2018.
Right.
It's about that.
5 years out.
I don't know.
Okay.
Guess that for a while.
Oh, it's coming. And we'll model it and we'll figure out what it's going
to be. Although, remember, the longer we wait to do it, the more it's going to cost everybody to have it done. With inflation.
Oh, bucks a buck.
Just a fact.
Just going to cost them a buck.
any more comment from
the director? Now, that's a statement.
Well, my question is that, and maybe I'm, so we have these A's and these D's, and we have when we're supposed to implement these things, and you did what you were supposed to based on the information we gave you. However, that doesn't mean we're really going to,
this is the record,
the town's money, spend money on a well. My contention is that we're going to get developers to.
Boy, we're just going back to that well, don't we? I have a question for you, John. Is there a measurable degradation of the existing wells in production?
Yes. Yes.
So if we did nothing and no building was going to go on, eventually we'd need a new well?
Yes.
Do we know when that is?
It's hard to predict. Well 1B was going pretty quick. We did a well rehab. We didn't get a great deal of increased production as we anticipated, but it did stay the same. It hasn't changed. We stopped the rate of decline. But
there's a shelf life to these wells.
Well 2 is 40 years old, and well 5 is has been a problematic well for a while. And so there's, I mean, again, you're sort of, with the largest single well out of service, you're at the point where you still meet the requirement.
With the improvement.
Sort of barely. Yeah,
with the improvement.
With the improvement. Otherwise, you'd be 200 gallons per minute short.
Yeah. I'm not contending we won't build this well. I'm just contending whether we're going to start it in 2011.
Well, I'm not even talking about base rate. I'm just want to make sure we get the entire picture. The entire picture is that at some point in time,
yes,
whether or not another yes, lot gets developed in this town, we're going to need to put a well in.
But in my mind, there are going to be other lots developed in this town.
Yeah, you've got developers in the EIR process right
well,
now.
Well, and they'll
want to build.
And as it happens with all developments, they will pay their fair share for their portion of the well.
There you go.
That happens automatically.
Any more questions? Okay. Was the public have any questions, please? Step to the podium.
Somebody get up.
No. You have two reports.
Let's do one at a time.
Yeah, at that point.
Come on up. Let's talk about water.
Okay. My name's Stephen Lennon with Hoppin Land Development. Back in August, I provided Rick with some input on some of the content of these tables, and that is not reflected in the report. Now, I'm understanding another concern here. That it seems the agenda that I received last week is different than the agenda today. There was an adoption of the master plan, some environmental documentation that was reflected in the earlier meeting notice. Now that's missing. So I guess your intention is to accept reports, not adopt these reports, and somehow that's a little different than what I originally understood. So
that is a fact.
Okay, so that may be a good thing. If these are not, you know, formal adoptions, maybe some of these comments are things that, you know, we can work on and get right. I think that the idea, I hope, is to just get these reports right and probably reflect the status of the development. What is the terminology, which really isn't well defined, but there's a terminology in the report that talks about the committed units. There's actually 302 committed units in Discovery Bay West, and that was in that documentation provided back in August. So that needs to be reflected. And, you know, and I don't know what the definition of these committed units are, but those are several hundred final mapped lots in the community. These 302 units are the same ones that are subject of the $400 per lot yearly assessment, standby fee, or whatever it is, ill-defined
the connect
fee. Yeah, it's not a connection fee, it's an annual fee. It's an annual standby fee or something. So those are, you're collecting 302 of those at this point in time, so that ought to be correctly reflected in the report. So I guess, you know, on the one hand, I can have this other comments and stuff. On the one hand, you know, I'd like to get things right, but on the other hand, there's certain things that need to get done to the system. We're talking about the water well, perhaps, you know, rather than approval about details, we can get an assurance that some of these, the content can get modified and included in the report, you know, correctly reflecting the actual number of units. We can get started on some of the design and programming for the important improvements that you folks need to be making here. I'm a little disappointed in the comments about the water well and the town not being involved in the start of that process. As I understand, and I get jumping ahead on who's going to pay the $1 million cost and how that's going to get programmed into a spending plan, but I would hope that you'd want to be involved in that initial process of where this thing's going, the environmental documentation, the neighborhood outreach, and, you know, what, because you're going to own this thing. You're going to be involved, and as it's already pointed out, you know, this is also for your benefit. It's not just a developer item, it's for everybody's benefit. Before there was treatment out here, there was 300 gallons per minute more water being delivered to the system than there is today. And you build additional water wells. These things, over time, they fail, they lessen their delivery, and that's something you need to program into your duties. And I would hope that, you know, as I say, I get, you know, a year downstream, and we're talking about who's going to pay for this, where's this $1 million or whatever going to come from, but God, I would hope that you'd be involved here in the early process and not saying, you know, hey, we're not going to do anything. I'd like to see you get involved in that process. If I understand correctly, the AA and the DD designations are not part of the master plan. That's just kind of telling you this is what's coming. You know, we have some comments. The DD ones are pretty clear, but the AAs, we certainly have some comments on the content of those and how those are reflected. Let's see, what else? So, I've shared most of the content items via emails, and like I said, I would hope that we can get the report content correct, and I mean, that's a big deal. It doesn't change the things that need to be done. It may reflect some change in timing, but the at least our initial steps here are pretty clear to everybody what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and we can get the report right in terms of the other content items.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
The part that you think we should be involved with, how much is that?
Well, I think you've already programmed that in. I mean, you got 30,
you
got 30, well, you got, yeah, you have something in your budget for this year to start doing
that.
I mean, that's, you know, that's baby steps to get these things done, but those initial baby steps are the ones that develop the momentum for later on. And if you leave that to somebody else, you know, that's just going to, you know, who's going to guide the process? I mean, we hope you, you know, we'd like to be involved, but it over, I guess we do, but it's got to get done. But I hope we have some statements here and understand it's for the benefit of everybody, and let's get on with it.
Any other comments, please? That's what Richard said.
I would just like to point out a change in the current final Water Master Plan from the June 10th, 2011 Final Master Plan. And you may not have the June 11th one, but both statements are on page ES-1 of the Executive Summary.
ES-1. What page, Bill?
Right here, ES-1.
Right there, okay.
And it's the second paragraph on that page. Now, you're not looking at the June 10th, the June 2011. I'll mention what it said. The issue is that earlier document made absolutely clear that there were two kinds of growth that were being discussed. One was the growth of the infill developments within the service area, and the other was the growth outside of the service area. And it made it very clear that the infill developments was included in the plan, but, quote, no future growth outside the district's current service area was included. Now, that's been changed in the current final master plan to say the planning horizon that encompasses the incremental growth of planned developments. And I'm afraid that leaves it so ill-defined that we won't know whether the planned developments are within the service area or outside the service area. And I would suggest that we go back to that earlier wording or something like it so that we all know what we're talking about. Thank you very much.
Why was it changed?
It,
basically a comment of the county. They reviewed it, and we changed it based on their correction. Some of these developments were outside the infill boundary. If you look, I'm not sure, what's your name?
Richard.
Bill, if you look at, we changed this based on a comment that we got from the county. They reviewed this, and they said, technically, this is an infill. This part of the Pantages is outside of that infill boundary, and that's where the change came. It came from outside comment from the county, not internal. There wasn't any issue there. So if you look on page figure 1-1, and you can see the future development, and then we corrected that we differentiate between an urban limit not shown because it exceeds the limits of the map. Service area boundary will have to be modified to include Pantages and Newport Point future development. And then, so it's like basically bullet two was, this map was modified as a result of a county comment we got received on the master plan.
I wasn't swift enough to follow you on page 1-1.
No, it's, no, this is picture. It's drawing 1-1. So you're saying that then, John, that the map pretty much makes the same definition that was in the original thing, but the wording changed because of a recommendation
by the
county.
The number of developments, the units, the boundaries of the developments, they're still exactly the same, but LAFCO, is it? They're the one, that boundary differs, and so we wanted that reflected in this document, and that's the only change. There wasn't any change on any boundaries of any development or the amount of development or anything changing relative to future growth.
That stuff that's officially not the district.
That's right.
It doesn't matter.
Yes. But they are included in the master plan for development. And
they're in our urban limit
right,
line. They're just not in our district.
And they're identified, and the projects are all included on table 2-1.
What the green? Are you talking about the green shading somehow reflects distinctions between development? I mean, you've got Pantages future development that isn't in the district is the same color as finished lots with water meters on it. So that was my issue earlier. Sure. I don't understand what you're saying.
Well,
if I understand it, that it's, you know,
it's
what you're saying.
It's green and it's future on this drawing includes the committed portion of it too, but it's the difference between what's there now and what's going to be there in the future in terms of current water demand. Okay, so what's your?
It's fine. That's what it is. I don't think that was responsive to Mr. Richardson's question about.
He saw a reference to infill before, and that there wasn't anything outside that infill boundary. And the county corrected us and said that the infill boundary, that infill includes some area that requires expansion of the service area. And that's what's reflected in the master plan. I can find some specific language in here. We actually address it. There was another. Page 2-1. Okay, it says figure 1-1 in plate 1. Some growth is expected to occur within the existing service area boundary or infill, and some growth is planned to occur outside the existing service area. Although there are additional undevelopment areas within the existing service area boundary, the master plan assumes there will be no development in these areas for the next 10-year horizon. The two developments planned outside the service area boundary, Pantages and Newport Point, would require the district to modify the current service area boundary through approval from Contra Costa County Land Use and Local Agency Formation Commission. This is a specific point that we had from Contra Costa County Land Use and LAFCO when they reviewed our draft document. So that's the difference between the previous master plan and this final one. And so I'm not sure what paragraph you were alluding to in an earlier draft, but if there was something removed that made reference to infill, it's related with this.
The earlier draft said there nothing outside the service area was included. What you just read said
it was
outside the service area is included.
Yeah, that's right. So the service area boundary has to be expanded.
That was more of a, if I can say, I think that the original document that Mr. Richardson referring to was inaccurate, and this more accurately reflects what is in truth or what is being planned for pursuant to the assumptions that were made, and the original document did not. So this document includes those developments that are outside our service area, for example, Newport Point and parts of Pantages. And now the document includes them, and it appropriately and accurately reflects that.
Which is what we had indicated we wanted to be included in the 10-year plan.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't accurately indicated. Just I'm being redundant.
The developments were included in the original.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But yeah. The language didn't reflect that.
The language did not match what was the assumptions.
We thought it was everything was in the service area, and it turns out that it wasn't. We were corrected, and that's what's reflected now. But if the boundaries or the number of units, that never changed. Now, it didn't have any meaningful change other than this paragraph that the service area needs to be expanded.
Please. Mark Armstrong with Pantages. Just by way of explanation as to why this happened, we knew all along that originally we were aware that part of our property was within the service area, part of it was not. The analysis that the environmental review folks initially did, though, said, no, that's not true. It's all within the service area. Okay, fine. The problem is that the environmental consultant was relying upon maps and documentation that LAFCO had saying it's all within the service area. Well, those maps were inaccurate. What they really reflected was a study done several years ago by LAFCO on updating its service areas of different organizations throughout the county. And one of their recommendations was to correct the inappropriate nature of not having part of our property within the service area and part of it not, saying that ought to be correct in the future. But the map and the documentation that LAFCO had in its files were stated as such that it had already been done. So the ER consultant said, oh, it's already been done. So a double check on that was the result of the reverting back to what we had originally understood to be true, but then the ER consultant figured otherwise. But I agree, I mean, Pantages has always been part of this process. We are, by any reasonable definition, infill development. So that's fine. Just one quick comment. The DD classification for the well, I don't have a problem with the notion that new development is going to be paying for a substantial part of those costs. But when your engineer confirms and all of you all recognize that whether new development came in or not, you'd eventually need a new well for reliability reasons, it's not, it doesn't meet the definition of DD.
We didn't call the well DD. It's A.
Nope.
Oh. Then I, new, okay, you the new water storage tank you've identified as.
Right.
Okay, but I'm confused.
As well as the washout tanks and the filters, because the new, we could process enough with the water. I'm sorry, John, you probably should answer this. The new well would be useful to the existing users in Discovery Bay without a new filter and without a new washout tank to augment the degradation of the old wells without having to put in storage tanks, filters, and washout tanks. Am I correct?
So we're talking about is the DD would be the new tank itself?
Storage tank, wash,
backwash
tank,
treatment,
and filters.
Filters and
those are
new water storage tank.
And that's associated with new development only because
the existing users wouldn't have to construct those components.
Based on utilizing existing storage.
Maintaining using existing.
I understand.
Those capacities are good enough. It's just the degradation of the wells that would cause the need for a new well.
So we'd have that water source.
I got.
And thanks for clarifying that infill.
Yeah,
that's how, there's the history of it, yeah.
It was LAFCO's problem.
Yeah, okay, I didn't know where it came from. I thought we were wrong, but, and then.
You were right if you looked at the documentation. The documentation is LAFCO.
Okay.
Let's carry on.
All right. Any further comment, please?
I just have an informational question, I guess, having been involved to some small extent in budgeting for this year. How much of the $334,800 I see here for 2011-12 is actually available in terms of what's been budgeted or what's in the reserves or whatever we call them? We ended up with some other accounts that were called capital replacement or capital improvement or something like that. Wasn't that right, Rick? I mean, that's something that you guys have to wrestle with if it isn't already in the budget for this year.
Well, I can tell you that some of these items are included in the budget, some of them are not.
That's what I was wondering, if they all were not. I don't recognize all of them.
And as a matter of fact, I've even taken little arrows and pushed them into an out year, because I know we don't have them budgeted for this year.
Yeah.
Your point's well taken.
Yeah, almost all that's not budgeted.
Correct.
Well, the $40,000, I think, is all we budgeted.
That's all we budgeted.
We did the budget, that was all it was.
We budgeted the transducers and the wellhead survey. So we did some of it. We did not do the big ticket item.
But if you're getting back to this other comment about whether
it's in the reserve. It's in the
water pipe replacement reserve.
Okay. Right. We had an account for that. If that's going forward, if you're adopting these reports, you're not. Okay. That's a big difference. Yeah, okay. Then that is the difference.
Yes.
Because it is the budget. Okay. To the extent that it's budget. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any further comment?
Rich here. John, you and I talked after your first report and all these water main replacements, and I asked you if they were based on fire flows, the current fire flows, and that's why they need to be. Did you ever go back and check to see what the fire, if the existing piping met the fire flow requirements at the time they were built? Like in 1985.
Well, I wasn't sure if the existing pipeline met that or not. We weren't involved with the testing of those, so I don't know what those may have, if they met it or not met it.
Well, I would assume if they got approval by the county for the plans and the fire marshal, that the pipes that were put in at the time met the current criteria for fire flows, that they wouldn't have approved plans. and now they were built and the homes are there. They've been there for 25 years or 30 years, and now we're saying we have to tear the mains down and replace them. So.
It's not strictly on the fire, but also, you know, you do get some change in your friction factor, and then there's some life of the pipeline too. There's some benefit for it's
pretty minor though. Fire flows is the big ticket item.
Right, but you also have the age of your pipeline, and most cities have a pipeline replacement program where they will start to replace some of their pipelines, and there's been some issues with some of the flow meters and some leakage and some problems that are being addressed with the pipeline improvements as well.
Yeah. Well, I understand you have leaks and corrosion, but most of this pipe is not cast iron or steel pipe. It's modern day supplies. So anyway, I'm just asking, you never did go back and check the analysis on prior flows, because that was a thing that if you look at your flow analysis, it was based on current fire flow, and that's why you said they were inadequate. And I'm just saying, well, if they were adequate when they were built, do they really need to be replaced?
Well, what we did was we put in all the water demands, the new water demands, and then calibrated the model, the hydraulic model, and there were some instances where what we thought would be a 8-inch pipe was a 6-inch. And so anything, one caveat we would put on any of these pipelines before they were implemented, that we confirmed the assumptions of the model in terms of pipeline diameters, et cetera, because that could have an effect too. And then it's worthwhile perhaps talking to the fire marshal. We talked to the fire marshal, set the criteria for these, did some calibration runs with the fire hydrant flows.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
And then we ran the model, and then we used the fire marshal's minimum requirements for pressures and flows to identify the pipelines that needed improvement.
Those are 2010 or 11.
Yes.
Requirements, not 1985. That's my question. You never did go back and check.
I didn't know.
Okay. Input back there, maybe.
Let me just clarify. In the 80s, we had 5 production wells delivering straight to the users, and they were scattered throughout town. When you built the treatment plants in 2002, you harnessed that into 2 different areas, and now we're having a problem getting it out for the fire flow. At the time, the wells came on and pushed it out. So they had that, if I'm not mistaken. It was a different process.
Different hydraulics.
Hydraulically, and then the Department of Health mandated now that we remove manganese and iron, which dictated to us that we had to build the treatment plants, bringing the raw water to the treatment plants. Now, 2 pipelines rather than 5 serving the district.
Oh, hold it just a minute.
Sure.
When we built this, the whole thing of the reason why those tanks was up was for fire flow.
No, it's the tanks were for treated water plus fire flow.
Yes,
yeah,
that's what I'm
saying. For fire flow to hold in the tanks,
because
not
that
four.
That was the only way we'd meet.
But not to out to the far ends of the older part of Discovery Bay.
I thought they did that.
No, it was not a hydraulic study as far as I know.
It wasn't a hydraulic study. Okay. Because I remember that was a big deal with the fire flow and the pressure.
Well, once you produce X amount of water, when you treat the water, it's coming out slower through the filters than you are can push it through the wells.
Hence the need for storage tanks.
Correct. I would have figured, well, I guess I was wrong, but I thought since that was the case, that would have been factored in when you spec'd out the tanks.
Because you don't want to have too much oversize on the tanks, because then you have to turn that water over or else it stagnates.
So Richard, did you get the gist of that? That the hydraulics, the original water distribution system was based on 5 wells running at different spots within the distribution system, and then now it's running at 2 locations.
Right. So when they designed the filter plant, they should have put in the proper piping to give the right fire flows throughout the whole district.
There was a lot of improvements. That would have cost a whole lot of money to do a lot of that then, because already there was water treatment plants and everything.
Any other final comments on this water report presented? All right. right, let's move on to wastewater. Okay, item two. No. Great, nice pictures. Thanks, Don. Thank you. Time you guys are.
Good evening, Gregory Harris with Herwood Engineering.
Thank you.
And we worked in conjunction with Stantec Engineering to produce a wastewater master plan for the town of Discovery Bay. This is a review of the presentation we gave the board in committee a while back. There's going to be a lot of discussion similar to John's presentation about cost and what year they'll go to. So I'm going to go quickly through to just kind of remind everybody what it is we did, and then land on the costing and the capital improvements, which is where all the action seems to take place around here.
Yep.
So,
well put.
The most important element is what was the purpose of the master plan? What is it supposed to do for you?
Give me horses.
And it isn't just to throw dollars at stuff. There's three elements to it. An assessment makes it seem silly. How is the plant physically doing right now? Are there any issues? Okay. Analysis of what your future might hold out for you in terms of, hey, you guys had specific developments you wanted to consider. What does this impact our plant? That's an analysis. And then how do we get there? How do we go from A to B in terms of parties? It's broken up into 20 sections or 19 sections. The first thing that we have to define is how many lots are in the master plan. What are we talking about? So we define out what is the future development that's going to take place. How much is current residential homes? How much is new office? And what's the total number of units? And that would define a table 2.1 of the master plan. Similar to, and I believe actually our boundary is identical to what John analyzed. We got the same developments and whatnot for that. There's also a map in the master plan of the service boundary. It's on page figure 3-2 is a map of the boundaries with a red line showing, you know, specifically what's in the boundary, along with that last table that we just saw. And there's also in there a summary of the pump stations, how much will they pump and what's involved there. That's on table 4-1. So we looked at your collection system. And then we came up with, you know, how many residents existing and future flows, and load. So we came up with existing, how many houses do you have? What kind of biological loading is going to take place? If you guys add flow from development, what would be your future? So currently, you guys are floating at an average annual groundwater flow of about 1.8. Okay. If you add up the number of EDUs, the equivalent dwelling units that you have, it calcs out at 1.86. So as we see it, we think there's some foreclosures, some empty homes, you know, some things like that, and your flow doesn't exactly represent what you would calc out on paper if you added up all the EDUs, but it's pretty close. If you add in the incremental flow in the boundary, you end up with a total of 2.37 MGD. So that's an important number because our quick and dirty assessment originally and then coming back final and carefully through the master plan is you have a capacity of about 2 MGD. Okay, so just to ground yourself, you're at 1.86 on paper by EDUs. We're physically measuring at the plant 1.8. If you add in the flows from developments and whatnot, you end up at 2.37. Okay? And if you read the master plan in detail, your conclusion is you're good for about 2 MGD. Okay?
So you define it as incremental. That's what the incremental line
is development.
Is the improvements. Okay.
Yeah. Whether that's infill development, is the
Understood.
People on the list that you gave us.
Okay.
Okay. In the master plan gives a quick summary. There's two plants. There's plant one on the north side of Highway 4 and plant two on the south side of Highway 4. They're both identical, except the solids and UV disinfection takes place at plant number two. And this is figure 6.1
right.
in the master plan. So there's two plants. You might hear plant one, plant two. So we do a plant hydraulic analysis. Every single pump, every single pipe is reviewed for your existing capacity as well as your future needs. It includes your inflow pumps, your outflow pumps, and your export pump stations. You have an export pump station that pumps close to the river. There are key elements to your existing permit. How are you doing? An assessment of how you're doing on your existing permit. And this table is kind of important because it brings up several issues. It's on table 2.4. And a couple of things I'd like to point out for you on that. In general, you're meeting your permit, but there's a few places that you're not. And so whenever you do a master plan and we have to sit down, why are you not meeting or what is this issue? This is on page table 2-4.
Yeah, what page?
2-5.
Thank you.
No,
page on page 2.4. It's we go through this every time we have a meeting.
All right, the title on table is 2-4.
Got it.
All right, so what's important is, in general, your plant does a good job of meeting your permit requirements, but there's a few exceptions where occasionally you have an issue. TSS is one of those, okay, and that's a settling issue in your clarifiers, and that comes up some issues. So you've had some non-compliance, you've had a fine, okay? That's what non-compliance usually means, so you're gonna get a fine, okay? The other one is total call form has been an issue, which is effectiveness of your VUV system. Okay, and that's based on the water quality that you put out. So if you blow your TSS, by the way, it usually means you blow your disinfection. So they're kind of related. All right, and then the last big item is you guys missed on your permit electrical conductivity, which is a measure of salinity, and you have a salt limit on your permit. So where in general you're fine, if you don't want, you do have or make the press once in a while. And you do have to get fined once in a while on these items that are listed here. And there's specific recommendations in the master plan as to what you might do about them.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
You were talking about non-compliance total coliform, and I'm reading here, it says occasional non-compliance, that was prior to recent improvements. So you're telling me we don't have that problem.
We can ask Bernie. I do think we had an exceedance, didn't we, recently?
No.
Not since we fixed the weirs.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so since we fixed the weirs, we have not. That's true.
We got that tuned up, so to speak, now to where we think we're. I know that it took a while to get that all working. UV situation.
We believe we have it tuned up, and we have scheduled a bioassay test to occur at the end of this month to verify for now and forever where we're really at.
So yes, we're making progress.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it also shows in this TSS that you were discussing that we've made changes there, too. tell the public?
Veolia's has implemented a new cleaning and clarifier plan, right? And they've done a few things on that, correct? So I don't think you've had a TSS in a while either, right?
So then we're really not in compliance with our permit. I mean, we started saying we're not in compliance with our permit.
Well, like I said, even your non-compliance was 99% of the time you were fine. It's just, you know, 10 times out of a year, you ran into a problem. And so the fact that the last 4 months you haven't had an issue doesn't mean that over a whole year you won't get one of these. But, you know, that was the basis of some of the recommendations master plan. And by the way, under salinity, nothing has changed on that. You guys are exceeding your own. 2167. Our limit is 2100. So it isn't getting any better. In fact, it's gotten worse. When we started, historical data we have, we were under 2100, and salinity has actually gone up. That's one thing going in the opposite direction. And that's under electrical conductivity.
That be because of the more houses and more warm soccer?
It's gone up a little bit. I blame Hoffman.
I didn't hear that.
Okay, so
somebody's buying houses.
Alright, so at any rate, we take a look at everything in the facility. So we take a look at your inflow pump station. In terms of its capacity and reliability, we've identified a few reliability issues, as well as you will need to expand your inflow pump station to accommodate future growth. Okay. There's also some reliability issues, some structural rehab, some piping modifications to improve reliability, and we recommend reactivating case pump station W to allow backup to the facility. I'll slow down anytime you guys want, but I know we're getting late, so I'm going to push on, and if you guys have a question, grab it. Okay? Are the headworks, you know, the flow measurement, the capacity looks good. There is some rehab that needs to occur on your headworks. Your existing facilities, secondary treatment, of course, this is the heart of your plant. This is how you biologically treat the sewage to meet your permit. And this capacity has been established at 2 million gallons per day annual flow. Okay, so that's the 2.0 limit you were talking about earlier. And that was quite an extensive modeling that needed to take place. The other item that is most important here is you can take a clarifier out of service in dry weather flow. But however, you cannot take either oxidation ditch out of service right now. You've reached the point of no return to where you cannot take an oxidation ditch out of service. So that means 10 years ago when we built plant two, we took plant one out of service to do repairs on it. We could at the time because the flows were lower. Okay, now the flows have exceeded the point where you cannot take one plant out of service and run it all through one oxidation. So what that means is you can't repair your oxidation ditches right now. You're driving and you got what you got and you can't fix it. Okay. So that's another important item to the master plan.
You get a flat tire, you keep driving.
That's right. You keep driving, you get a flat tire. Okay. Existing secondary treatment facilities, we recommend adding a new clarifier and then adding some standby floaters. And then again, you know, you can't take an oxidation ditch out of service. We are recommending what you might call a combined measure. It both serves you and it might serve future development. We recommend you build a third oxidation. Okay. So here's some costs. This is the cost breakdown on the secondary treatment. $6 million. It's not a cheap alternative. Okay, $6 million to build oxidation ditch clarifier.
Take us to that.
Sure. This is on table 2-6.
Which is on page 2.8? 2.9. That was close.
It's digital.
Okay.
So this is kind of what is entailed to make that modification of adding a third oxidation ditch clarifier along with some RAS pumping station improvements and stuff. Now, when you add all this up, it does two things. It does give you reliability and redundancy towards your existing plant. It would also accommodate the future flows that are scheduled in the master plan to give both.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would think costs would be split in some manner related to that. Okay. Now, if they never, as Kevin brought up, if they never built another house in Discovery Bay, someday I think you're going to have to build another ditch because you can't repair your existing ditch. Okay, how long you want to go towards that point is up to the town.
I think we were all pretty much in agreement with Steve.
We're all going to the same thing.
I don't need to go through any of my antics?
No, you don't have to make an ass out of yourself.
Okay, great. I'll hold on.
All right. So anyway, that's the story on the often discussed third pump station. All right, secondary effluent lift station, some VFD, some pump improvements would be needed place to take account of future growth. Tertiary filters will be needed if they change your permit. All right, so if they, TSS continues to be a problem, the regional board usually comes back and tries to ratchet on you, you know, every permit renewal at some point. It's not unfeasible, they might ask you to put in filters, and the master plan evaluates where they would go and what they would cost. But they are essentially a permit item. UV disinfection, there was a lot of discussion on this because you've been having violations on it. You've been having violations every year on it, and it was important to understand what's going on. We believe you have enough capacity for your existing systems if operated properly. We did find some errors in the original construction that have now been corrected, and since then, you have been operating without any violations. We are doing a test this month to confirm a biological bioassay where we actually dose virus, check the kill, you know, go back and then write a new report about it. So that's going to occur here at the end of the month. And if you accommodate future flows, you're going to have to expand if you're going to accommodate future flows. And the on-site viral bioassay, the bottom one, has already been started. So the preliminary, the pre-test has already been done. We're getting ready for the full-blown test. Salinity reduction, your permit's pretty onerous. The regional board's actually trying to open your permit. We're not exactly sure where this is going to go. However, they originally wanted you to get to 1,000 just to keep your numbers clear. And where they want you to get to 1,000, which is essentially looking at your background level plus 500. So your background level in discovery base is like 560, okay? They say our water quality objective in the river, we want you to get your salinity down to where it's about 1,000. You guys are discharging 21.7. All right, so you're not even close to 1,000. They gave you an interim limit of 2,100, you know, saying, okay, we want you to get to 1,000, but we'll give you a limit of 2,100, but you got to do a whole bit of plan and show us how you get there, and you guys are busting your 2,100 limits. So that's where you're at right now, salinity. Okay? Your new permit revision that's been discussed with the regional board will change how these rules work for you guys. But at the moment, you guys are violating here. You guys are violating the permit. Yes.
How does that compare to other communities?
The 21 number, you guys are bigger than everyone we know.
Okay. So we're not being...
So like Tracy's like 1,500.
Per capita.
Okay, so yeah. we're not being uniquely singled out or asked to do something that nobody else is doing. We're just high.
All right. That is correct, and in fact, the whole plan area for the regional board, so Region 2, that's discharging into the Delta, they're looking at all the permits, starting because there's a lawsuit with Tracy. Basically, they came back and told Tracy, you're going to get under 1,500 or 1,000. Tracy sued them. They fought back and forth. They're redoing all the permits based upon that. This was originally the settlement that occurred out of that lawsuit, and now they're working on it some more again. But everyone is having a salinity address. Everyone that discharges the Delta is having a salinity address by the regional board. It's in their permit.
What's Tracy's right now?
What's that?
What are they at now, Tracy?
Well, the last reports I saw, they ran between 1,200 and 1,500. Okay, so they were still like 500 away, going, well, I'm never going to get there, you know, kind of thing. And you guys are, you know, twice the number. So, and I don't think you're ever going to get to 1,000 either without eliminating a lot of things in the town. You know?
These bullet points that. Those are all the things that have to happen to meet 1,000?
No, well,
or those are options?
These are the options. So, you know, in terms of, you know, we were discussed, okay, let's say the regional board gives you a C&D, cease and desist order, and says you have to meet 1,000. What does it mean to the town? Okay, what does it mean to the town? Well, there are only one technology that'll take you guys to 1,000 that we know of right now, and that's reverse osmosis, okay? That would cost you $15 million to build and probably cost you $2 million a year to run.
Energy cost?
So if the regional board really put the flame on you guys and said, go do this, you know, that could be potential damage if you don't make some progress. I think they'd be happy with progress. You're going backwards. You're going the wrong direction. But I think they'd be happy with some progress towards.
Is there plans in here to get us going forward?
Well, the regional board in your permit requested you guys to do a salinity reduction plan. you did a draft plan, you gave it to them to review, and they never reviewed it.
We're still waiting.
Okay, so I remember that. Okay, so Virgil is going to proceed on some additional testing. You guys paid for some additional testing 4 years ago, and Virgil's setting up a plan to do some additional testing on some homes with and without water meters, or excuse me, water softeners, to get a real estimate of what might improvement be made, or say, to eliminate water softeners in the district.
We talked about that a few months ago. Didn't you come talk to us about that a few months ago, Virgil?
November,
yeah.
So okay. I think, you know, the master plan says, hey, you guys need to make some progress on here. Start implementing at least the draft plan that you came up with. It'll be helpful if you can show some progress. Since this plan has been adopted, the regional board just called and says, well, we want to reopen your permit again on this issue. So where it lands, I don't know. Other than, I think you ought to continue with the testing that Virgil's proposed. At least you have that data in your back pocket. Because it is a big deal. Should you eliminate water softeners or not? We have data from communities that dropped their EC by 500 when they implemented a ban on water softeners. So it went, you know, they had it in their community at the treatment plant. We had a ban. 6 months later, it's 500. So there's data out there to show that water softeners at least contribute to the issue. They may not be all the problem, but they contribute. But certainly before you propose something like that in Discovery Bay, you ought to get some real data so you know it's a real benefit to
spend the acres
before you did it. And that's what Virgil's trying to do. So the recommendations in the plan are, you guys better start doing something, not spend a lot of money, but start doing something so that you can at least demonstrate to the regional board, hey, we're not going to take on this pain. You know, we have a plan, we're going to make some progress. Emergency storage basins, this would be needed for future direct development, help out to reduce loading on the UV systems and possibly filters if you need it. You guys have a wetlands on site. It's been actually very useful to you. It actually demonstrated the data that had the regional board not changed your permit on copper, that this would have been a vial treatment technology at a lot lower cost than the other options out there for you. University of Berkeley also is still doing research at the facility and such. So we basically recommend, hey, its original purpose seems to be eliminated in your permit, but it seems to be useful, and we would say you built it, I would keep it in service. Essentially, it's the master plan recommendation. Soils handling, this is another kind of a pricey issue for you guys. Essentially, when we built two solar dryers and one belt press, the original recommended need calculated out is you needed four dryers and two large belt presses, essentially. Okay, we said, 7 years ago, let's ease into this, not, you know, put all eggs in one basket, make sure we like this technology, make sure this comes along. So we built two dryers and one belt press. You guys are short on processing sludge capacity, and the master plan is simply pointing that out, that you need eventually to build, in phase one, you need to build, I'm sorry, there's a mistake here. Phase one should be one solar dryer and two belt presses. And then phase two would be one solar dryer. So phase one is one solar dryer, one belt, yes.
We already have, is that two additional solar dryers?
On top of what you have now.
So that would be four solar dryers
total.
And three belt presses.
Total, yes. Mm. All right, so what you guys have decided to do, and this was, you guys are woefully behind on this one. So the phase one calcs out right now that you would need this. And what's happening instead, solids are going to your lagoons. So instead of being processed, they've been building up in your lagoons. So lagoon one is completely full. And now you guys are starting to fill lagoon two. So you have some time, it's not panic button time, but you guys have got a big old lagoon full of sludge out there, and you're starting to fill your second lagoon. So it's time to get serious because you're gonna get yourself to bind if you don't. The action so far has been to ease into phase one. All right, so you know, some money was authorized to bid a belt press project and start some of the work on the solar dryer, and that is what just actually bids received for that today. Okay, and then there's a budget planning to kind of ease some more in the next budget cycle on that. But at the moment, you guys have not authorized 4.65 million. You've authorized over two budget cycles, 1.6. So, yeah.
So without being aggressive with phase one, the lagoons, we're not going to diminish the capacity in the lagoons. In fact, we're not even going to maintain.
That is that correct. You won't be able to process enough solids. Now, what we're hoping is, you know, engineers are a little conservative. Okay, let's build the belt presses and see how much better it gets. Okay, and then, all right, we need, you know, keep on going with the plan, you know, essentially. But right now, if you don't build at all, you're going to be short on processing solids. Yes, and they're going to, essentially then, Lagoon 2 will continue to fill up, maybe slower, because you're not going quite in such a deficit, but you'll be continue to build Lagoon 2, you know, and then, of course, Lagoon 1 remains full.
But there are things we could do to buy time.
Yes.
By emptying one of the lagoons.
Right, if you wanted to pay for a temporary measure to empty one of the lagoons.
Or get a portable press.
Or, you know, some other things. So, you know, like I said, the budgets, you guys have, like, you know, let's not go raise a whole bunch of money right now. We've got this budget. We can sneak some in this year and some next year. Let's make some progress towards this and see where we're at. That's essentially how the board's proceeding on this item right now. SCADA system always needs to be upgraded and improved. The technology changes all the time. Hardware doesn't last forever. Technology comes out, obsoletes your old processors, your old PLCs. You got to make improvements. And so, you know, essentially, you're going to have a district-wide sort of ongoing maintenance of your SCADA system. Your SCADA system is quite extensive. If you go through it, it's quite sophisticated. Now it's quite extensive. It covers, 17 radio stations and four plants, and you know, there's a lot going on in it. There's a lot to maintain. So this is just pointing out there's some upgrades that need to take place there. Okay, so that's essentially all the things that I went through, and then it's summarized on table 2-14 in the master plan. And so rather than pop up a table there you can't see, I would recommend you turn to table 2-14 in the master plan. Now, the table was revised a couple times since the master plan came out to kind of push dollar amounts forward or backwards in the budget cycle. But based upon everything you just saw, I'd like to walk you through this table and maybe tell you whether this item's for reliability or maybe it's future growth or what the issue is and when it might occur. So if you have that table, you'll see that we have 16 items that are listed on the table. In addition, we've kind of said, what's the budgetary cost for the item? When might you begin construction of the item? And is this an immediate improvement because you have an immediate deficit? Is it a critical improvement because of some other criteria? Or is it just, hey, we think you're going to face it someday based on growth? And then, is it an unlikely improvement? You know, reverse osmosis we see is unlikely, but you know, it is something that's out there, kind of thing. So we've kind of broken it down that way. So on each one of these, I'll comment. So influent pump station modifications. Okay, we have been told that growth is going to begin again in Discovery Bay, and if that is going to take place, that we might want to begin operation in 2014. Okay, so that was what we were told. Okay. So as you see in here, possible timing, if you wanted to be online in 2014, you'd start getting your act together in 2012 about design and permitting, et cetera, on that. In this particular case, you have the pump station, influent pump station approved. There's some rehab that has to take out the pump station, and you need to put some bigger pumps in to accommodate growth. Yeah. So two things are occurring in that. You need to accommodate some future growth, and you need to do some rehab and reliability improvements to your existing pump station. Okay, so that would be like a combination cost, if you would, in terms of this. If you were going to have homes coming online in 2014, then you would have to accelerate or get organized in 2012 on that project. Okay, reactivate pump station W. We seal as it's a rehabilitation ability for you because we can't fix the influent pump station. The coating's coming off the wall, some of the things, until we reactivate that pump station. So there's some cost to do that. We see it as an immediate deficiency, and it's based on rehabilitation. Emergency storage facilities, you guys already have these at Plant 1. It just needs some grading work, and it kind of goes in conjunction with the pump station W for it to work properly. And it gives you some reliability at the treatment plant. Number 4 is the big one, the third oxidation ditch along with associated equipment. Again, this is for rehabilitation in the sense that you can't go repair any of your existing oxidation ditches until you build it. But it also accommodates future growth. All right. Secondary effluent pump station modifications are all primarily growth related, and we see it as a down the road item towards build out. Okay. Secondary effluent equalization would be required if you're required to build filters under your permit, because it would reduce the loading on your filters, peak shade for your filters. And then effluent filtration, same thing as down the road. Revised UV disinfection weirs. There is actually a project that we identified that you should do this year that optimizes how the weir split. It wasn't the issue we fixed already. It's to improve the performance, and that's about a 10,000 item. Conduct UV bioassay, you guys have already started, also a rehabilitation item. UV upgrade, that's a future growth issue, about 1.2 million. Reverse osmosis would only be required by permit. You likely would sue before you implemented it, something like that, but that's an item that's out there. Most is more likely to happen to you if you don't show some progress on doing something to control slant. Okay? Add pump deck for pump station is a future growth requirement. Solids improvements, okay, we just talked about. This is, you have an immediate reliability shortfall. Phase one. Phase two is a growth-related item. When the growth continues on, you build the second phase of that. 15, collection system pump station improvements. There's, generically, you have some very old pump stations. They need to be rehabbed, and we recommend you set aside a budget over, every year. You fix the station, continue that rehabilitation that you're doing now. Similarly for the SCADA system, there's just continuing work that you'll always do on your SCADA system, make sure it's properly functioning. So based upon that, we have a summary of immediate improvements of about $5.3 million, the majority of which is solids, the majority of which you guys have split out and are easing your way into based on existing board actions.
That 4,651 is really 1.2.
Well, it's 1.6. Now you've budgeted 1.6. I don't know if we can build it all for 1.6.
No, I mean, but we're going to spread it out. What I'm saying, it's not all in one lump.
It's not. Well, first off, it's right. It's not all in one lump. Yeah. You've authorized 800,000 in this fiscal year, and you're planning for 800,000 next fiscal budget. Okay. So over the next 2 years of that 4.6, you're authorizing 1.6, and we're trying to build as much as we can, think the buck thing, and see what happens. All right.
Yeah.
But it won't build everything that.
No,
we were supposed to
that.
So that's a good question. So the 5.3, you're easing your way, and the majority of that money is in 4.6. However, we do strongly recommend you proceed on the remainder of the items in that list. Okay. Yeah. On the critical improvements, we know that you need to build an oxidation ditch eventually. Mm-hmm. It's a risk reward thing in terms of repair and maintenance. Okay. So I issued a separate report about the history on this. I showed some pictures of the degradation on the old ditch. When it occurred, how long was it in service, those kinds of things. And that's just, how long do you want to drive on the car when you know you don't have spare tire? That's basically the story on that. Until development says, I want to be online by a certain date. Right now, you guys are capped out on development. I.e., you cannot accommodate even all of the lots you've written. Okay? So, and that's based on the math that we've been working on with Hoffman and whatnot. So, you do not have capacity in your treatment plant for anybody else. And you're short for some of the people you've already committed to. So that's an important number because it was the question that started the whole master planning effort 2 years ago. Okay, so the question was, can you accommodate somebody else? The answer is no. Okay? So that is the summary on that.
It's a long time to get that answer.
Yeah, but we got it. That's what's important.
I'm not asking any more questions.
And a lot of money. Greg, I don't see anything in these improvements with regards to our delivery system to the plants. I don't see anything about pipe replacement or anything in here.
You guys have a process where you annually replace a certain amount of pipe, and that needs to continue, so we didn't think it was anything to address.
You guys already
have a CIP replacement program for pipe in place. It's probably a little short, in my opinion, but it wasn't a specific question that people requested in the district.
I just think of Cherry Hill.
Yeah.
Any public comment, please?
Wait, don't get too...
Oh, you almost got away.
Just the same comment, and let's get the units reflected correctly in what your meeting is.
All right, thank you. Rick, with that, information before you this evening. What the staff would be looking for would be for the board to accept the reports. We would then take that information back. We'll bring to you within the next, as part of the capacity, the connection fee project that's going on. We come back to you within about 60 days to identify those projects that we would recommend be included in a project listing, if you will, for financing. And we'll bring it in as a draft report first, obviously, and then bring it back out as a final report once that's completed. So that would be staff's recommendation this evening.
I would like to see us alter that a little bit and bring it in with the corrections that Dave Lennon asked for, so that we have actual numbers.
The numbers are correct that he's asking for. What he's requested, the numbers don't change, the dates change on the numbers. And it would change the implementation schedule of table 2.1 in the water plan, and I don't remember what the table number is in the wastewater plan.
In the wastewater plan, we actually did list house by house. That was a separate analysis. And I don't think anything would change the wastewater plan relative to Dave's comments. Those comments relate to, okay, how the houses add up outside of the plan, and we went through that, that's outside the plan.
So the numbers are correct.
The numbered units are accurate.
Yeah,
it's 703 or the 302. In one place you've got 200 something, and it's actually 302, and then
we'll correct those numbers. The information you sent me, that David sent me yesterday, had to do with moving up the dates of estimated date of completion on this schedule. I know we spent a lot of time on this schedule, and so by moving up those dates, it would change the schedule of the, at least in the water master plan, the capital timing of each of the projects. It would have a domino effect on those.
Sure.
And I mean, for example.
Well, that's because at the time that we gave out that information, it was early on, and David has better input for us now than he had before, correct? Or did we just make an assumption without asking questions?
No, we got this information from Hoffman.
In fact, I
spent time on the phone with both Mark, with Pantages as well as David, and identified the dates as well as the best ideas that we had on when some of these projects might be coming forward. And what's happening is he's moving some of the dates forward, and we'll correct the unit numbers if those are off, but at least the dates. I think we just have a philosophical difference as to when some of them are going to be moving forward.
It's the unit numbers.
So with that, I think the staff would be looking for the board to accept the plans tonight, and then staff would come back with the capital financing plan concurrently with the connection fee project that's going moving forward.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'd like to, before we adjourn, I'd just like to thank Greg and John and both of their staffs.
Bravo.
It's been a big, big effort, and also those members of the community that have sat through this, and directors Tetro and Graves, who spent a lot of their time studying these reports as well, and for Virgil and his group as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you. With that, I'll call this meeting adjourned.